You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
It is Thursday, March 30th, and we are oh so close. The final Cardinals podcast before the 2017 regular season commences. We're joined, as always, by Jennifer Langosch. And Jennifer, just what the Cardinals need, right? Another ailment, another injury, and another name on the DL. That name, Trevor Rosenthal, as he was just sent earlier on Thursday to the 10-day DL. This does open the door for one of my favorite names in all of baseball, all of sports, really, to come back into the fold. So give us the details about all that.
Yeah, you know, certainly not what the Cardinals anticipated. The Cardinals, of course, thought they had set their roster last weekend. But Trevor Rosenthal is now on the DL with a right lat issue. It's the same issue that sidelined him early in camp earlier this month when he had to shut down for about 10 to 14 days. You know, I haven't gotten word yet as to how severe this is, but certainly the fact that he will not be on the opening day roster is a big deal, and it's really a disappointment to Trevor, who had a fairly good spring outside of the injury issues kind of cropping up here and there. He had redefined himself, stretched out. The Cardinals very excited about the prospect of using him over multiple innings in the bullpen. He even got a look as a starting candidate, and now, of course, he is on the DL. So his injury, though, is Sam Tuivasa's opportunity. So Sam was optioned out a week ago. He was just called back up. He'll be on the opening day roster for the first time in his career. He had a pretty good camp, Matt. He had one really tough outing that kind of ballooned the ERA, and it's hard to recover from that when you don't have that many opportunities in March. But this is a guy who showed a very good curveball to go along with his high 90-mile-per-hour fastball this spring. He'll be used out of the bullpen probably mostly in non-leverage situations, but he'll get an opportunity to get a look here as Trevor Rosenthal's on the mend.
Yeah, I will never get tired of saying the name Tuivasa when I'm doing a Cardinals highlight package. So for that reason alone, I'm pleased, as disappointed as I am for Mr. Rosenthal and his ailment. So, Jen, in terms of the bullpen configuration, on it, you know, obviously Son Wano is the ninth inning guy that's locked and loaded, but was Trevor going to be, you know, the eighth inning bridge? Was that set in stone? Or if not, how do things kind of shake out now with that bridge construction leading to Owen in the ninth inning?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, Trevor's role was really going to be somewhat undefined going into this season. As we've talked about before, the Cardinals were very excited about the possibility of kind of using him as a flex reliever. They were, you know, intrigued by watching in particular what Andrew Miller did in the postseason last year. And while it's impossible to replicate that sort of bullpen usage over the course of 162 games, the Cardinals liked this idea of having a guy who can maybe, you know, pitch the sixth or seventh inning, say, you know, and bridge a close game from a short start into the back end of the bullpen. Well, now with him out of the mix, I think what we're going to see are those late innings covered by Kevin Seagrass and Brett Cecil, your two lefty setup guys, as well as a Jonathan Broxton in that mix. Matt Bowman has the flexibility to pitch multiple innings if needed, so the Cardinals might use him there. They also like how he fits as a ground ball specialist, kind of a la Seth Maness, what we saw Maness do the last couple of years, be the double play guy when the Cardinals got in a jam. I could see Bowman fitting there. Miguel Sokolovich, another guy who can pitch multiple innings, and with Trevor now not in the mix, at least for the start of the season, you know, Sokolovich's role could be enhanced a little bit. And as I mentioned with Tuivasa, probably more of a mop-up guy. I'm not sure we're going to see him in any big spots until he can, you know, really kind of earn his way into those. But I still think, you know, even with Trevor now questionable, obviously out for the start of the season and questionable as to when he'll return, I still see the bullpen as a strength for this Cardinals team. I mean, they essentially have four or five guys that you'd feel very comfortable pitching in the back end of a game, and that's a really good place to be coming into opening day.
Yeah, no question. A lot of depth in that relief core, but again, you know, you lose one guy, and there's always the domino effect. Everybody gets bumped up a spot, and to have a guy with Rosenthal's experience and versatility not at your disposal, at least for the beginning of the season, it's a hurdle to overcome, but hopefully not a big one as the Cardinals try to get by without him, at least for the first you know, week or two here of the 2017 regular season. Jen, transitioning to the starting rotation, Adam Wainwright had his final spring training tune-up on Tuesday. He was pretty vocal about, you know, needing to have that start go well and also needing it to be against the Mets, which it was, because, of course, as we recall, the Mets absolutely bludgeoned the poor guy for 10 runs in less than two innings a couple of starts ago. The numbers this time around are much better. His only real blemish, a three-run homer he gave up to Lucas Duda. You know, it might sound ridiculous somewhat to put so much emphasis on a spring training start for a guy with as much, you know, mileage on his arm and experience as Adam Wainwright has, but just how meaningful was that five-inning start for Adam considering what happened the last time he faced the Mets?
Yeah, I mean, just our kind of peace of mind on his behalf. He really, as you mentioned, he really wanted that start. It wasn't but a couple days after that forgettable start he had in Port St. Lucie in the middle of March that he kind of looked ahead at where he'd be pitching his next few and his next final Grapefruit League games, and was very excited to see that last one would come back in Port St. Lucie against that same Mets team. And he faced a real good lineup, that last time out. He looked good. He didn't look great. I did think it was interesting that Wainwright acknowledged that his first start against the Mets, he kind of just went out there and pitched without a lot of thought, without a lot of conviction or intention behind his pitches, and quite frankly said that he deserved the outcome that followed because of kind of the lackadaisical approach that he took, which is not something we're used to hearing Wainwright say. This last start, he really treated like he would a regular season start. I mean, he did the same pregame routine. He got up there in pitch counts. And he felt really good afterwards. The thing for him moving forward, that, you know, if there's any concern, is we still saw quite a few pitches up in the zone, and he needs to kind of bring those down a little bit. And he's just going to have to be finer with his command. I mean, this is not a guy who's going to overpower you with a high 90-mile-per-hour fastball. So he's going to have to be crafty. He worked, of course, on the changeup and the curveball a lot this spring. Those are going to have to be weapons for him. And he's just going to have to get back to maybe kind of like, out-crafting other batters if he's going to want to be successful at the age he is with the repertoire he has.
Yeah, it's a matter of, not saying he can't overpower certain guys in certain spots, but that's not going to be his primary game. As you said, he's got to be a little more crafty, outsmart guys a little bit more than maybe he had to in his younger days, and it'll be a very interesting 2017 season for Adam Wainwright, of course. The guy he's going to be throwing the majority of his pitches to, Yadier Molina, no secret there. And a very interesting situation now with Yadi. He's pretty much put the Cardinals on the clock with regards to his contract situation. He said rather bluntly that if the Cardinals do not offer him a contract before the season opener, which is a day before most teams, they play the Sunday night game against the Cubs, then Yadi is not going to hesitate to test the waters in free agency after the season. So I guess the question is, how much pressure is on John Mozeliak right now, Jen?
There's a lot. I mean, right now, quite frankly, Yadier Molina has all the leverage in this, and he really did kind of shake things up here with what's been a pretty quiet Cardinals camp, and quiet is usually good because it means things are going well and guys are staying healthy. But Yadi came back from the World Baseball Classic completely re-energized and kind of a little bit youthful seeming after playing with so many young players on that Puerto Rican team. And he is not afraid of becoming a free agent. And he actually, in some ways, kind of welcomes the opportunity so he can find out what his value is. That being said, he says that it's still his priority to try to work out something with the Cardinals. He put that deadline, that Sunday deadline, on the Cardinals, and that did reignite conversations between Molina's agent and Mo beginning earlier this week on Monday. Those continue, and as of my last talks with Molina and Mozeliak just yesterday, both sides acknowledge that the clock is still running and that there's still some gap to make up. So I'm not sure right now how I'd quantify the likelihood of something happening by Sunday, but certainly this is going to be a talking point and potentially a distraction on this team if it's something that's not finalized before Sunday. And for Yadi, who has given his heart and soul to this organization for so long, he wants to be the highest or among the highest paid catchers in the game. And what that's going to mean is a pretty big jump in salary. And he's not afraid to go and see if it's not the Cardinals, if another team is willing to give him that as a free agent.
Yeah, it's going to be a tense couple of days in Cardinals camp, no doubt, as the situation lingers. And Jen, what I'm curious to find out from you, had this been Yadi's position all along, or did his standout performance in the World Baseball Classic kind of motivate him to draw this line in the sand right now? Because he knows he's a smart guy. His stock is sky high right now. So did that kind of motivate him to say, look, we got to get this done before Sunday?
Yeah, it's a good question. He had never before this past weekend drawn a line in the sand. So in that regard, unless maybe perhaps he had thought as much, but publicly it was the first time that he had come out, and it really caught the Cardinals a little bit off guard because just probably about 2 weeks ago, John Mozeliak had talked about how there really wasn't this sense of urgency, that he was willing to do business during the season. Then all of a sudden he hears from his catcher, and that's a feeling that's not shared from the other side. I think the one thing that the World Baseball Classic did do for Yadi is it really made him believe that he can play, he can be an elite catcher for several more years. And I think that's where he and the Cardinals might run into a little bit of a disconnect, because here you have a guy who will turn 35 this season. How long are you willing to commit to him at the dollars that he feels he rightfully deserves? And if we're talking among the highest paid catchers in the game, you're talking of Buster Posey making 22, Russell Martin making 20 million this year, Yadi at 14. So that salary would have to jump. And if Yadi truly believes that he can now play three or four more years, is that territory the Cardinals are comfortable in going to? And I think that might be where there's a little bit of hesitancy, is they expect some sort of regression to hit at some point. On the flip side, of course, this is a very special player in organizational history, and certainly there is something to be said of the possibility of him being a lifetime Cardinal and what that would mean for his legacy. And the Cardinals certainly are considering that as they're trying to work through these negotiations.
Yeah, it's so hard. It's so hard when you're trying to do business. You got to take sentimentality out of the equation. Easier said than done. And, you know, like you said, that we're not talking about a guy who plays as a DH in the American League. We're talking about a guy who plays the most demanding position physically, maybe mentally too, of any position on the diamond. He is creeping up on his mid-30s, and it's interesting because, you know, on one hand, he does deserve the money. On the other hand, the Cardinals have a business to run. As we said, it's going to be a very interesting 48 to 72 hours leading up to that that Molina-imposed deadline of Sunday night. We'll see what happens there. Jen, transitioning, you know, there's always a feel-good story in spring training camp every year. I think last year it was definitely Jeremy Hazelbaker. This year, Jose Martinez, a decade in the minor leagues, he was informed by Mike Matheny that he's not going to ride the buses any longer, at least for the time being. He is on the opening day roster, and I would think that for you to cover these types of stories and to talk to these guys that finally see a lifelong dream achieved, it has to never get old.
It's so refreshing, Matt. I mean, it's, you know, when you talk to a guy like Jose Martinez the day that he learned that he was going to make the opening day roster, he was nearly in tears. I mean, that's what it meant to him. And I think so often we see these top prospects just climb up and have the path paved for them, or, you know, other guys maybe have a little bit of adversity, but they break through pretty easily. But to talk to somebody about a journey 10 years in the making, somebody who had three surgeries on his same knee within a four-year span and was told by a doctor that if the last one didn't take, his career would be over. Somebody who won the Pacific Coast League batting title a couple years ago and couldn't even get a September call-up with that organization. For him to continue to persevere and to come and have such a good camp, and I mean, he earned his spot. This was a spot that the Cardinals were probably ready to give to Tommy Pham when camp opened, and Jose Martinez changed a lot of minds. It's really cool to see. Again, it's very refreshing to see and a special story, and it means so much to this guy, again, who's gone through so much. You hope for success. It's going to be a challenge for him, quite frankly, because he's going to come and be on a team and he's going to serve in a bench role. He's not going to get a lot of playing opportunities. So staying sharp is going to be something he's going to have to learn how to do in a part-time role. But certainly, I don't think anybody is going to have more fun on opening day at Busch Stadium than Jose Martinez.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty safe bet. What a wonderful story, and hats off to him for sure. Jen, as we come down the stretch here, a couple of random topics I want to throw in your direction. What player on this team right now, after perhaps underachieving last year, is poised for a bounce back? It might be a guy that we've already talked about extensively here, but give me your answer on that.
Yeah, it could have easily been Trevor Rosenthal, but I think regardless of Rosenthal's status, Michael Wacha stands out as that guy to me. He had a sensational spring, and all those questions coming in about his shoulder and would it hold up, he answered very strongly. Now, of course, his season is going to be defined largely by durability. You know, what can he do in the second half of the season? Will his shoulder be strong? Will he be healthy? But if what we saw in spring is an indicator of what's to come, Michael Wacha is not a fifth starter on this team. He is potentially a frontline starter. That fastball changeup mix is really good down in the zone consistently. The curveball looks like a pitch that he can actually use with some success this year. So credit to him for changing his workout regimen this offseason to get himself strong and in position to potentially thrive again and kind of be the pitcher that we saw break onto the scene in 2013.
And Jen, the other side of that coin, give me a guy that's maybe in your eyes or the organization's eyes, maybe overachieved a little bit last year and is therefore a candidate for at least a slight regression here this season.
Yeah, probably Jed Jerko. I mean, when you think about, you know, who led the Cardinals in home runs on a team that hit 225 last year, I don't think many people would have guessed it would be Jed Jerko with 30. I have a hard time envisioning him hitting 30 home runs and 400 at-bats again this year again, too, because, you know, for him, playing time might not come as regularly as he hopes. That being said, I think he can still be a very important piece on this team. His versatility is huge in that he can spell guys' time across the infield, and he is going to be able to provide some of that pop that we saw last year. But to expect 30 home runs from him, I think, might be a little bit of a stretch. So I would expect to see that number regress this year.
And, Jen, to wrap up here, as we said at the top, our final podcast before opening day 2017, with that in mind, from previous home openers you've covered at Busch Stadium, what is your favorite memory? What stands out to you?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I've only covered one home opener one opening day home opener at Busch Stadium, and it came as a visiting writer when I covered the Pirates. It was probably my most memorable opener anyways. I remember waking up that morning in St. Louis across the street at the hotel. I looked out my window and there was snow covering the ground, so didn't know if we'd have a game that day. It did melt away. We did have a game. Unfortunately for the Cardinals, it all fell apart in the ninth inning. I remember Jack Wilson hitting a bases-clearing double with the team down by two and two outs in the ninth inning. So the Pirates came away with the win that day. Again, it was my first time ever experiencing true opening day in St. Louis, as the team typically opens on the road. So I'm excited about Sunday night. I can't imagine a more electric atmosphere than we're going to have here with the defending world champions and them, you know, of course, being the Cubs here in town. It's going to be fun and probably one of the better memories I'll have.
Yeah, I bet. That's going to be a game a lot of eyes are going to be glued to. So many storylines, again, with the Cubs as world champions, with Dexter Fowler facing his former mates. It's going to be something. I know that's that game's going to bring in a lot of eyeballs for sure. Jen, we're going to wrap things up a little bit differently this week, as you recently had the chance to sit down with Mike Matheny as the two of you discuss what's in store for the St. Louis Cardinals in the upcoming 2017 season.
Here with Mike Matheny as we wind down camp here at spring training. Mike, as you look back on camp this year, in what ways do you think your team is going to look different on the field in 2017 than we saw in 2016?
I think every way. No, we have a very motivated group of guys to put a different product on the field. And this is coming from them. They want to see themselves be a better defensive team. They want to see themselves be a better pitching club. I think we all want to see the little things. And it's something that our organization's taken a lot of pride in for a long time, getting runners over, getting guys in, making the plays, being better base runners. I mean, those sort of things have kind of been, I believe, synonymous with the Cardinals organization. And it somehow eluded us last year, and something that our guys have learned from and are very motivated for it to look differently. So I think all the way across the board we're going to see different.
When you talk about the fundamentals, I mean, that was a focus priority day one of camp. How have you seen that play out, and are there noticeable differences in spring this year?
Yeah, I think without question, once again, the idea on the bases has been a big focus that we're celebrating, and the guys are buying into that. And, something that just seems so trivial is maybe getting from first to third and how it can change the complexity of the game, how putting pressure on the defense with what you're doing on the bases, how that all of a sudden turns into better pitches that the hitter gets, or maybe a ball that gets past the catcher. And then the defense is just being a little more intentional with the work that we're doing, and having a game plan of what each individual needs, the repetitions, making sure they're getting enough, not just doing it to do it, but have a purpose. And really having the guys themselves help define what it is that they would like to see themselves improve on, and then put a game plan together of how that should look in their work. So I think so far this spring we've had a much cleaner game all the way around, and it's something that I know is contagious. So anxious to watch them implement it for our 162 plus.
Two of the guys who were kind of intriguing names coming into camp are Michael Wacha and Trevor Rosenthal. Both, you know, we didn't know what we were going to see or what role that they might fit. Can you describe what you've seen from both of those guys this spring and how you do think that fit will be for them?
You know, Michael's healthy, and that was our concern. And we're just trying to get him a place where if his arm feels right, the stuff looks different, and it's looked different all spring. So part of our responsibility now is how do we keep him there, and when his stuff's right, he has the ability to really be a dominant pitcher. And so it's going to continue to look at how he prepares in between his starts, how to keep that strength up, how to keep his weight on. I mean, all those things are great challenges for him. So we'll help however we can, and just hope for the best for the health. If he's healthy, he's going to be in a very good spot. Trevor also looks good, and what we were planning was just giving him a little more time, let him throw off not just out of the pen, but even in the starter's role, and kind of stretch him out a little bit. And he's responded well. He's had his last outing was very efficient, kind of outing that you could see if we needed somebody to step in any role. He's getting to the point where he would definitely be a consideration. But we know what we have. When he's throwing the ball well out of the pen, he can be a shutdown guy in any inning. Even the last one, which he's had a lot of success in. Sun Juan O's in a great place, but it's nice to have other guys who've had experience at the back end. It just gives us more depth.
When Dexter Fowler signed here in December, there was a lot of excitement about what he would bring and the impact he would have. How would you say that's manifested itself in spring, both on the field and in the clubhouse?
Yeah, he's electric wherever he goes. I don't know if I've ever seen a personality like his in a game. I mean, just a guy who almost defies cliques. Wherever there's a group that seems to kind of be separating themselves, he inserts himself and he draws them back to the rest of the group. And it's not like he's making it happen, it's organically for him. He just likes people. You can tell he loves this game, he loves life, and those are just kind of people. I don't care what industry or what company you put him into, it's just going to make people better. On the field, there's just no question. He's exactly what we'd hope for, what he's doing at this work. The other outfielders and helping the communication and teaching. And then he goes about his at-bats as good as anybody in the game. And just real happy with the addition that he is on the field, but in our clubhouse. And I think we're going to be saying the same thing about the St. Louis community. Just kind of citizen we like having around, and just anxious to watch how it all plays together for our club.
This is the first year since you took over as manager that you guys aren't entering the season as defending division champs or having just made a deep postseason run. How does that change the messaging or the motivation for you?
Yeah, and I think a lot about that over the winter and really just kind of rest on what the guys say and what they're thinking, not necessarily just what I'm thinking. I want to represent their thoughts and ideas. And you know what? It's almost the elephant that's in the room. Another team out there that had just a terrific season last year, and they're going to continue to be good. But the focus and the concentration that I hear from the guys isn't necessarily about another team or about the lack of talk about our club. It's internal. It's about what do we need to do differently, and I love that. And so that's what I'm feeding off of. If I felt like that was some sort of edge that we needed to point out, hey, don't forget about us. But I'm not hearing that from them, so it's not going to come from me. And what I hear is, let's take care of our own business, and we get to go out there and compete. And we're anxious to even start that on opening day.
The countdown continues to opening day 2017, less than 1 week away. Adam Berry, our Pirates reporter, joining us here on this Tuesday, March 28th. Adam, we thank you as always for the time. And never like to start off a podcast on a down note, but this situation with Jung Ho Kang looking pretty dire. What is the latest on that? It certainly seems like there's a very distinct possibility that he's not going to make it even into the country. Forget about playing baseball.
Yeah, reports out of South Korea indicate that Jung Ho Kang was denied a work visa due to the suspended 8-month sentence in jail he received following his third DUI arrest since 2009. That sentence was suspended for 2 years, but it's still on the record. And all the reports out of Korea basically indicate that that is what's keeping him from, being granted a work visa, which would allow him into the country to play for the Pirates. With that being denied, his only hope really is an appeal, which is supposed to, or reportedly supposed to go through and be heard around mid-April. That would lower that sentence into a court fine. And I guess theoretically it would be more likely that he would obtain that visa if he has a fine and not an arrest and a jail sentence on his record. So that is basically the Pirates' best chance to get Jung Ho Kang in the country and on their roster. But for now, they're going to move forward without him. The complications with that basically leaves no timeline on when he would be here. And then whenever he does get here, he would have to get in baseball shape. The Pirates are kind of focused on who they have, and right now and for the foreseeable future, they don't have Jung Ho Kang.
Yeah, it's just a very odd situation, a very, a sad situation, given his legal problems and the fact that he may not play baseball at all, at least for the Pirates in 2017. Adam, when you talk to Neil Huntington, I don't know if you get a feel for what his thinking is, what his attitude is. I mean, is he kind of starting to resign himself to the fact that he's not going to have this guy for the season, or is he still somewhat optimistic that at some point something is going to get worked out?
Yeah, I wouldn't say they're quite too resigned to not having him all season yet. I mean, you know, it clearly went through their thinking throughout the offseason with what they did, even as far back as last year when they signed David Freese to a two-year extension, you know, preparing for, you know, the possibility that he might not be around or that he might be, you know, off the field for a significant period of time. I think they are still hopeful that they'll get something worked out. Keep in mind this guy's under contract through 2019, so it's not simply a matter of this year, and now he is currently on the restricted list. So he doesn't count against their 40-man roster, but they still retain his rights and his contract. So, yeah, I mean, they're really just focused on the guys that they do have. They have, you know, some decent alternatives, some experienced options in David Freese, you know, and a guy like Phil Gosselin, pretty interesting utility players, and Adam Frazier and Alan Hansen. But the tough part is going to be replacing Gong's bat in their lineup. This is a guy with 30-homer potential, you know, a really good protector for Andrew McCutchen and Gregory Polanco, guys like that. So I think if they're going to miss him, it would be more in the lineup than in the field.
Yeah, it certainly seems that way. And of the guys you mentioned, you know, Phil Gosselin and David Freese among them, who could Gong's absence benefit the most simply in terms of getting more playing time?
I actually think in an interesting way it could benefit Adam Frazier. We've seen it the last couple of days, specifically on Monday night here at Lecom Park. The Pirates actually bounced Josh Harrison over from second to third base and gave him a start there and put Frazier at second base leading off, which is where he's been in every single spring training appearance so far, Frazier in the leadoff spot. So it could benefit him. You know, they could sort of reintroduce Josh Harrison as a super utility, everyday type player. David Freese is going to get the lion's share of playing time at third, you would imagine, just based on his experience and some of the success that he had last year, especially early. But I think they're going to be cognizant of not wearing him down, which may have been the case given how frequently he played at the beginning of last season while Jung Ho Gung was rehabbing his knee. You know, I think Alan Hansen and Phil Gosselin could benefit simply with a roster spot. Both of them, you know, they'd be right now sort of competing for a, you know, the same utility type spot. But if they have an extra bench spot to play with, you know, maybe one of those two makes it where they wouldn't have earlier. So, you know, it sort of it trickles down into the rest of the bench and even into one guy who might have began the season in AAA. You know, from the Pirates' perspective, they have people to cover it. They have qualified players to especially play defense there. It's just they don't really have the offensive potential even combined that Jung Ho Gung does.
Yeah, that's going to be the tough part, as you mentioned. But nonetheless, it is going to open up a lot of opportunity for a lot of different guys, and maybe some mixing and matching is in store for Clint Hurdle with his second base and third base spots throughout the duration of the season as we all await some sort of resolution to this situation regarding Jung Ho Gung. Adam, moving on here a little bit, it seems like Gregory Polanco, after simply crushing the ball all throughout the World Baseball Classic, he's a little dinged up right now. What's the latest on him?
Yeah, he's dealing with some soreness in his left shoulder. That was something that came about after a throw down at Fort Myers against the Red Sox on Thursday. He has not played since. We haven't seen him throwing, and that may not happen until a little bit closer to opening day when he can test that out. So, you know, right now that would leave an opening in left field and another pretty big opening in the lineup for however long he's down. Neil Huntington has still left open the possibility that he could be ready for opening day. And it's another thing we've talked about. They open an American League ballpark. This is something that bothers him when he throws. Theoretically, he could be, you know, a designated hitter type if his shoulder is well enough to hit. But we'll see where that goes. But at this point, he's out of the lineup and not throwing. And, you know, they would obviously like a solution or a resolution to that by opening day. That said, the fact that the disabled list is now 10 days minimum instead of 15 gives them a little flexibility to put him on the DL to start the season if need be, so he can be healthy and ready to go, you know, within the first 10 days of the season. They don't lose him for half a month. They lose him for a third of a month, if that were to be the case.
Yeah, I know the teams have mixed feelings, so to speak, about interleague play, but in terms of the timing of an interleague series for the Pirates, it cannot be better timing because, as you said, if need be, Polanco, who just has crushed the ball all spring, and in the World Baseball Classic in particular, could DH if the Pirates need him to, if that shoulder is not up to par in terms of playing the field. So we'll see how that plays out. Adam, of course, the big battle right now, as has been the big battle for the last couple of weeks in Pirates camp, has been for that final, really the final two rotation spots. I know that one guy that was in consideration for one of those spots has been dropped as he's been sent to AAA. And of the guys that remain, kind of give us who has the inside track on just who may be numbers four and five starters for the Pirates come opening day.
Yeah, well, Neil Huntington finally dropped the inside track talk with Chad Kuhl and said that he, and confirmed what we all expected, kind of the worst kept secret in Pirates camp, that he is in the rotation. He'll start the third game in Boston behind Garrett Cole and Jameson Taillon. Before Ivan Nova, who's going to start the home opener, the fourth game of the season, that was pretty much a foregone conclusion. Most of camp, just based on the success that Chad Kuhl had in his major league debut last season. That leaves open the fifth spot in the rotation. The guy that you mentioned that was sent down today was Stephen Brault, the left-hander. That leaves Drew Hutchison, top prospect Tyler Glasnow, and Trevor Williams competing for that final spot. It also means the Pirates are going to have an all-right-handed rotation. Kind of in a ballpark built for left-handed pitchers, but you know the goal obviously is to have your five best pitchers, regardless of which hand they throw with. It's Hutchison, Glasnow, or Williams at this point. Huntington has left open the possibility that one of the two, you know, will be in the rotation, and then or one of the three will be in the rotation, and then one of the others will potentially nail down a spot in the bullpen. So I think Williams is maybe the most interesting guy in that regard, given his sort of ground ball tendencies and simply the ceiling that Glasnow has as a starter. My gut instinct all spring has been that Drew Hutchison will nail down that fifth spot in the rotation. He is starting a couple of minutes here as I speak at Leetom Park, so we'll see where that takes him. The Pirates won't really make a decision on their final roster until probably the morning of opening day, so we've got a couple more days to debate and deliberate this.
Yeah, and these guys have a couple days to chew their fingernails to the core as they await the decision from Clint Hurdle. I know that Glasnow in particular looked very good a couple of days ago. His most recent outing, I think 9 strikeouts. From everything you've seen in spring training up to this point, was that the most eye-opening outing by a starter so far?
Other than everything that Garrett Cole has done, probably. Garrett Cole has looked at something that I mentioned the other day. It kind of gets lost in all the hand-wringing over the fifth starter spot in the spring training competitions. You know, we get so caught up in the news and the, you know, the potential roster battles and stuff like that, that we lose sight sometimes of the core and the, you know, ultimately the core of the Pirates rotation. Garrett Cole, Jameson Taillon, Ivan Nova has looked great this spring. You could not have asked for a better spring from all three of those guys. But Glasnow has also put together a pretty encouraging stretch here this last week or 10 days or so. He's probably had his two best starts of the spring. You know, he said he had kind of an aha moment in Clearwater regarding his two-seamer and changeup. That's the kind of thing you want to hear for him as far as being more efficient, getting quicker outs, you know, forcing hitters to put the ball in play while still having that swing and miss type of stuff and an elite fastball. He looked good the other day, too. His efficiency was more of a battle, but it wasn't because of a lack of control, which is an important distinction. It was more that, you know, guys were battling, putting together long at-bats. They were fouling off pitches, and he was getting into deep counts, not necessarily falling behind and then striking guys out, which takes more pitches than a, you know, one or two pitch ground out. So a lot of encouraging signs from Tyler Glasnow. Still not clear whether he breaks camp in the rotation or in the bullpen, but I think either way you have to be happy with what you've seen.
Oh, no question. And I know that a popular poll, you know, this time of year from MLB experts is, you know, which team or teams is going to have the best rotation. I rarely hear the Pirates in that conversation, but as you said, this could be a real sleeper rotation, given a bounce-back year from Cole, Nova continuing what he did last season, you know, Glasnow potentially, Taillon especially, really coming to the forefront. This could be a very underrated rotation heading into 2017. Adam, as we come down the home stretch here, I want to get your thoughts on a couple of rapid-fire topics. As far as a guy that could really break out this year, it tends to be we skew towards the younger guys that maybe had a taste last season and are ready to do big things in their first full campaign. Who is your pick to have a real breakout campaign for the Pirates here in 2017?
Yeah, I don't know if this is necessarily adhering to the rules of the question, but I'm going to say Gregory Polanco. Same guy we said last year, probably.
Probably.
You know, and he did break out for about 3 or 4 months. You know, he had a great start and then kind of faded down the stretch. I think this could be the year if he's healthy. And again, this most recent bit of news is not a good indicator in that direction. If he's healthy, you know, he has just, you know, the sky is sort of the limit for him. He has all the talent in the world. We saw the bat play. I think he's going to surprise some people with his ability to play defense in left field this year. You know, and you could be talking about him alongside Marte and McCutchen is, you know, that sort of third piece of a really, really, really impressive outfield.
Yeah, that could be just a dynamic, dynamite outfield. Certainly has the potential here in 2017. And, Adam, for the next topic, I think everybody and their mother knows the answer to this question. I'm going to ask it anyway. Who on this Pirates roster could have a bounce-back 2017? Who could that possibly be?
Well, there's this fellow who also plays in the outfield for the Pirates, goes by the name of Andrew McCutchen.
Really?
You may have heard he had a little bit of a disappointing season last year, you know, after a pretty impressive career, and he's pretty determined to bounce back. So that'll be my guy. I actually think Gerrit Cole might be more of a surefire pick to bounce back from where he was last year, just
good
because
point.
His troubles were so directly related to injuries, and he's been healthy this spring that I think – you know, he could just completely return to that 2015 form, and I really wouldn't blink and, you know, bat an eye at it. Whereas McCutchen, you know, just the fact that we don't have a reason for what went wrong in 16 makes it hard to just say objectively, like, okay, he's going to be back to being himself in 17. So I would still bet on the person and bet on the player in Andrew McCutchen, but, you know, definitely don't forget about Gerrit Cole in that regard.
Yeah, excellent point. And if the Pirates can get the 2015 Cole and the 2013 McCutchen, the year he won the MVP, then look out, baseball. It could be the resurgence of the Pirates here in 2017 after missing the playoffs last year. And on the other side of that coin, who is a guy that maybe overachieved a little bit last year and could possibly regress here in 2017?
Yeah, I don't say this with a ton of conviction because, I mentioned I've been really impressed with what he's done this spring, and I think some of the changes were for real. But I think Ivan Nova has a chance to maybe take a step back. I don't know if he's going to be a 3 ERA guy pitching, you know, complete games, you know, every fifth time out. It just seems like a lot to ask of a guy given his career track record. So I will say he has the potential to maybe take a step back in 2017. I still think he's going to be more or less what they need, which is a durable sort of mid-rotation starter. I just don't know if he's going to pitch like kind of the top of the rotation arm that he, you know, was for 2 months last year. Well, you know what? I said the same thing about Jay Happ after his sort of turnaround with the Pirates, and look what he did last year for Toronto. So
yeah.
Who knows? You know, Nova very well could be Happ 2.0 in that regard, too.
That's why they play the games. Jay Happ won 20 games last year. He certainly carried over what he did in his brief cameo as a Pittsburgh Pirate. We'll see if Ivan Nova has a similar kind of leap here this coming season. Adam, to wrap up, it's our final podcast before opening day. So from opening days past, what is your favorite memory personally?
I'm actually going to pick a moment that's kind of close to me personally and close to all of us, I think, at MLB.com. It was last year at PNC Park. Before the game, the Pirates did sort of their in memoriam tribute, and they included our departed friend Tom Singer. And just to see his face on the scoreboard, you know, kind of know that he was watching over the whole season, watching over the team, I think was a pretty special moment for everybody in the ballpark and especially everybody in the press box. I think that shows, you know, some of the, you know, the emotional side of the game, you know, the fact that everybody's connected to it, you know, the way that we can all kind of pour into it and just a reminder of, you know, what baseball means to people and what people mean to baseball. So that really stood out to me last season before the first game of the year at home at PNC Park was, you know, a chance to remember and, you know, respect our friend Tom Singer.
Yeah, I could not have said it better myself. Well put, Adam, and I always told people that I could listen to Tom Singer read the phone book. He had just an amazing, just such a distinct voice. He was a wonderful, wonderful man, a tremendous reporter, and he is certainly a sorely missed. So that is a wonderful memory to share, and we thank you for that, Adam. And right now we're going to end the podcast on a bit of a different note as you and the other team reporters had a chance to sit down with your team's respective manager. You, of course, had the chance to sit down with Clint Hurdle as you discuss the upcoming 2017 season for the Pittsburgh Pirates.
Hi, this is Adam Berry, the Pirates beat reporter for MLB.com. I'm here with Pirates manager Clint Hurdle. Just shortly before opening day, Clint wanted to get your impressions of this year's team. coming off of three straight postseason appearances, a losing season last year, still a lot of faith in the clubhouse that this year's team could be something special. What's your impression of the group at Star Spring?
Why wouldn't there be a lot of faith in the clubhouse? We've had a good spring. We've had an energetic spring. We've had a competitive spring and a very hard-working spring. So I think we're pretty solid at honest self-evaluation, and we realize that there was work to be done over the winter in every aspect, from Neil's desk, from my desk, coach's desk, and then and the players, their opportunity to go out and play and improve in the areas that we focused over the winter. The challenges to meet in spring training, base running, finding the back end of the rotation, adding to the bullpen, creating another powerful bench. So those things are all in play right now. Love the attitude, love the effort and the energy this spring.
It's no secret that Andrew McCutchen had a disappointing year by his standards last season. You haven't seen a ton of him this year. He's been away playing for Team USA in the World Baseball Classic. What do you like about what you have seen from him this spring and his ability to bounce back?
There's a lot of value that can be added with the experience in the WBC. I think everybody picks at it from a different side. My focus is already, I've had a conversation, a debrief with Josh. I've not had one with Andrew. First time I saw him was this morning. But in a quick exchange with him, he said, I've got a lot. I got a lot out of it. He's hungry. He's committed as he always is. He's on a mission. We worked through the challenges with the realignment over the winter. He was the linchpin. The guy that we wouldn't even be having this conversation if we didn't have an elite defender in Starling Marte to put in center field. Wouldn't be a conversation. Andrew acknowledges that. Andrew was wondering what Marte and Polanco thought, and Polanco and Marte would want to make sure Andrew was okay. So I love the respect they all have for each other personally and professionally. And then I share with Andrew about this isn't about him not being able to play center field. This is us putting our best defensive skill sets in the proper spots moving forward. There's been talk for 2 years about these three potentially being the best defensive outfield in the game. I think this gives them the opportunity to be that. We haven't gotten there as they were structured the last 2 years. And with Andrew in center, with Polanco in right, and with Starling in left now, I think it's real. It could play out. There's going to be less wear and tear on Andrew as the season moves on as well. I believe that's going to help the battle in the box, going to help the battle on the bases. And there's going to be games where he's still going to be able to transition, I believe, back to center field in Marte's absence, whether it be a day off, whether it be a ding-up injury. I'm looking forward to watching him play and having a really solid bounce back.
Another guy who was challenged last year, Gerrit Cole, by injuries. He seemed really impressive this spring. What have you seen out of him?
Very athletic on the mound, very focused, appreciative of the health. I think that's one thing that I love watching players when they go through the perseverance, the challenge, the rehab, and then what they really, the different walk they could have. And I've seen it many times, a different walk once they're healthy again. After having to struggle, the season's going to take you places. When you can maintain your health, maintain your ability to go out and compete and not have to be unplugged or on the DL, it's huge. In Garrett's case, a healthy offseason. Not so much a rehabilitative offseason, but a healthy offseason to get stronger, to be ready to come in. Love the stuff that's coming out of the arm. I also love the way he's integrated and pushed in and poured into all his teammates as well. Been fun to watch.
There's some uncertainty right now with Jung Ho Kang. Neil has said he's unrealistic for opening day at the very least. How do you feel about your depth behind him with David Freese and some of your other infielders?
I love our depth. We created depth number one. We're going to get the opportunity to utilize it coming out of the chute. Whether it's Harrison that moves over there, whether it's Frazier, Gosman, they've all had reps. Osuna's taking balls on every field but a game field at third. We'll see how he plays out if he even makes the club. Jaso has played third. You saw it, 9 innings, no balls,
no
and one foul ball. So we'll see how it plays out, but we've created guys to put themselves in position to help David in the case that it's an extended time where he's got to play to keep him fresh as well. So like where we're at, like the way the men have poured in, and we've always had a really solid next man up mentality here.
Last thing, you mentioned the back of the rotation competition. What have you seen from some of those young arms in camp? They made their major league debuts last year, maybe a little bit more experience coming into the spring.
More experience for everybody. I mean, we had 12 men make their major league debut last year, 10 were in camp to start out with. We've got a chance for a few more this season. That clubhouse has been piratized. We've got more guys that have come up through that clubhouse and have been through our development system, which I appreciate and I'm so grateful for. It's making us a closer knit team here. I love what I'm seeing. I mean, Edgar Santana had a very impressive spring. Elias Diaz had a very impressive spring. So behind the plate with another potential bullpen arm, and then some of the other guys that were up here, some of the starters, whether it was Epler, whether it was Holmes, fun to watch. Big, strong men moving that ball downhill. As I had a manager a long time, he said, they can throw it and the grass will bend on the way to home plate. That's fine.
It is Tuesday, March 28th, and we are just 5 days away from opening night, 6 days away from opening day 2017, and who will be the opening day 25 for the Brewers? That question and many others to be tackled today by Adam McKelvey, our Brewers reporter. Adam, thank you so much for the time. One guy that we do know is not going to be on the opening day roster, a bit of a surprise move earlier on this Tuesday. Scooter Gennett placed on waivers. The Reds claimed him. How off guard did this catch you?
Well, not off guard that he's not in the mix on opening day, because we'd known that, you know, there was a possibility of a move. I'm surprised it was waivers. David Stearns tried to make a trade. He did not find any bites, did not get even close to making a deal, and the Reds were able to get Scooter Gennett by simply paying the salary, not having to give up a player. I think that part of it surprises me. I mean, this is a good offensive player, a left-handed hitter, and there are some teams looking at second base, but Scooter Gennett, who tried really hard and kept a really positive attitude about this switch to kind of utility, just wasn't going to fit and get at bats on a Brewers team that's going to use Johnny Villar at second base to start, and has Hernan Perez, who's just a much more versatile player defensively than Scooter Gennett is. Scooter was just below those guys in the depth chart. There wasn't a spot for him, and the Brewers had to bid goodbye. And what I wrote, Matt, is it reinforces just, you know, I know every team has turnover, and I'm sure every team could go over how few players remain from, you know, year X. But with Scooter Gennett gone, the Brewers' second longest tenured, now let me say this right, their second longest continuously tenured position player behind Ryan Braun, who do you think it is?
I could make 10 guesses
to get
them all
wrong,
I think. You're
not going to get it. It's Domingo Santana.
That's amazing.
Who came to the organization during the rebuild. So it's really emblematic of just how far this turnover has gone. They have completely remade the roster, especially on the position. But there are some pitchers who've been around for a while. But on the positional side, the turnover has been quite remarkable.
Yeah, I mean, and like I said, I could have guessed 15 names, and Domingo Santana would not have been one of those 15. That's truly a remarkable stat. And, you know, Adam, we're all big boys and big girls here, and we know that this is a business and a big boy business at that. But like you said, Scooter Gennett, a guy that endeared himself to so many people because of his work ethic, his attitude, his demeanor, his, you know, positive, upbeat outlook. To lose a guy like that, and again, I know we're talking about a business here, and guys come and go all the time, but is there a sense of, I don't know, maybe loss is too big of a term, too heavy of a term, but again, a guy that had that kind of attitude and demeanor, how much does it hurt to lose a guy from a clubhouse like that?
I don't know. I mean, not to diminish what he did, because he was all those positive things that you said, but I think they're used to it in the clubhouse at this point. You know, this is a team that's undergone tremendous turnover over the last season and a half. It's been clear that nobody is immune from that. You know, Ryan Braun himself almost got traded last August. You know, I think the guys just understand where this team is at. And again, maybe this is another example of why it was a smart decision for Mark Attanasio and David Stearns and before him Doug Melvin to just be upfront about, here's our plan as an organization. It's going to involve a lot of change. It's going to involve some patience. You know, being upfront about that, I think maybe it even helps in your own clubhouse that guys are just, this doesn't, a move like this, to put it differently, doesn't come as a huge surprise.
Yeah, and that's a good point. That, like you said, given where this organization is, and you know, it can be somewhat of a, you know, a free for all. Just, you know, guys coming in, guys going out, and the latest on that treadmill, so to speak, is Scooter Gennett, as he is now a member of the Cincinnati Reds. Adam, to transition to the bullpen, there's a possibility. I don't know, you know, how great of a possibility, but come opening day, the Brewers may have a bullpen without a single lefty, as Brent Suter was optioned to AAA just recently. Tommy Malone is still in the mix, but Is this a concern that the Brewers on opening day could have a bullpen without a single lefty, or is it, you know, not a big deal right now?
Well, they've done this in recent years before. Now, they've had, say, Will Smith was a big part of their bullpen, a really good lefty. But they've had stretches where they have not had a left-hander, and Ron Renicki was the manager for one stretch I can remember. And his take was always, give me a right-hander that I really like over a left-hander just to have a left-hander. And, you know, they did not have many lefties in camp. And right now, you're right, that the possibility is they won't have one. Now, the key to that is you're going to have to find a right-hander who you are confident against left-handers. The Brewers had that for a long time in Tyler Thornburg, whose stuff, a good changeup and a really good curveball, just happened to work really well against lefties. If they go with what they've got now, Thornburg is a Boston Red Sox now. So they will have to find some arms that they have a lot of confidence against lefties, because this is a division with Joey Votto, with Anthony Rizzo, with some of those really good Pirates outfielders, Polanco. You know, there are some tough lefties in this division in the National League Central, and the Brewers are going to have to find some weapons to get those guys out. So I don't know. We'll see. The one thing that makes it really tough in talking about the Brewers roster until the minute they have to set that roster is that last year David Stearns picked up Carlos Torres about 48 hours before opening day, a move no one saw coming, and Torres led the team in appearances. So the caveat with this front office is always that things can change. And as Craig Counsell pointed out just the other day, the opening day roster is the roster for one day. And that, you know, maybe we make too much of a quirk like this, because that could change very easily with an acquisition on, you know, a week from now, for example.
Yeah, and like we've discussed before, there's so much attention on game one, and you kind of forget that there's games 2 through 162 you have to kind of factor in there as well. So a good point made by Craig Counsell, and you brought up Tyler Thornburg. He might not pitch for the Brewers or the Red Sox this year because he's got something weird going on with his trapezius muscle or tricep or something like that. So maybe the Brewers pulled the trigger on that trade just in the nick of time. Remaining on the topic of pitching, Adam, Willie Peralta looked real good the other day against the Royals, 5 2/3 scoreless. Is that the best to you that he's looked all spring?
Yeah, and remember, he's had kind of a disjointed spring because he went off to the World Baseball Classic. So he kind of ramped up quick, then he went away. He pitched pretty well for them in the Columbia game and came back. And I was talking to him this morning a little bit about his spring. It was a little disjointed, leaving, then coming back, you know, going into that charged atmosphere at the World Baseball Classic with that great Dominican Republic team, and then coming back to spring training as kind of sleepy spring training again. So I think it did take him a bit to get his feet under him. He ended on a high note. I think he'll stay back in camp while the rest of the Brewers go north to stay on schedule for his first start of the regular season. And I've got him as an interesting guy. I mean, this is a guy who's had some success in the major leagues. Looks like he was on this upward trajectory, started opening day for the Brewers last year, and then have just a really terrible season, which he salvaged at the end, but there's no way to get around it. When you look at it in its totality, it was a bad season for Willie Peralta. So he's to me an intriguing guy if you're looking at bounce back candidates to kind of keep an eye on. He still throws really hard. He's still youngish. He's still cost and team controlled. I've kind of got an eye on him as a don't count his career over just yet. I think he's got some baseball left.
Yeah, I think a lot of people would agree, and that's actually a perfect segue to, as we come down the home stretch here, a few more spring training superlatives like we did last week, kind of some rapid-fire topics here. One of those, of course, was, you know, what player could have a bounce-back season for the Brewers, and of course you mentioned all the criteria for Willie Peralta to have that bounce-back season. Is he the guy that when you look at, you know, somebody on this team that is primed for a bounce-back, or is there maybe somebody else, whether in the bullpen or a position player, that could also have a bounce-back season too?
No, I mean, I put Peralta in that category. And in fact, I'm writing a story literally as the phone rang here to do this conversation that is kind of on that topic. I think Peralta is a really interesting, you know, maybe even a comeback of the year type candidate. His season was that bad last year at the start. They had to demote him to the minor leagues. He pitched really poorly in the minor leagues as well. Remember, the Brewers have that tough Colorado Springs situation, but he did not pitch well. He did not even necessarily earn his way back to the major league. The Brewers just simply had a need for him when Junior Guerra went down in August, Willie Peralta was a guy who was on the roster they had to bring back, and he put together 10 really nice starts at the end of last season to put himself back on the organizational map. I wonder even if it would have been a different outcome for Willie Peralta had he not pitched as well as he did down the stretch. Maybe he's a non-tender candidate, and he's somewhere else this spring. So I think he has a lot riding on this season, a great opportunity to pitch and bounce back.
And, Adam, how about a guy that's really poised for a breakout season with so much young talent, up-and-coming talent on this team? One guy that you kind of zero in on is somebody that could really break out?
Well, I will steal from one of MLB.com's up-and-coming talents, Daniel Kramer. He filled in for me a couple of days on the Brewers beat and is such a great young reporter in our arsenal. He did a really cool story based on StatCast data to sort of back the idea that Domingo Santana and Keon Broxton are each breakout candidates. Both of those players ranked really high, and you can see all the data on Brewers.com within that story in exit velocity. And look, this is something really simple. Hit the ball hard, good things happen. Nobody needs data to show that. But what we have now with all this StatCast stuff is we can quantify this and we can put them relative to other really great players in baseball to see how often they barrel up the ball compared to, say, Miguel Cabrera. And there's some interesting Miguel Cabrera data in that story. So both of those guys fare really well, not just on the team, but in Major League Baseball in terms of hitting the ball hard consistently. If they do that over the course of a long season, if each of those guys stays healthy, I think they have an opportunity to be breakout guys.
Yeah, like you said, the backup data is great, but it's a pretty simple tenet. You know, you hit the ball hard, hit it in the air, good things do tend to happen, and we'll see if Broxton and Domingo Santana will be candidates to really break out this year. Adam, to wrap up here, from all your previous home openers at Miller Park, what is your favorite memory that stands out?
Well, your first is always the best, right, Matt?
And sure.
I would say my first home opener was very, very memorable. 2001, the first regular season game at Miller Park. It was a night game on a Friday night, which is weird. You know, now, at least in Milwaukee, they've done opening day during the day for as long as I can remember. But I was reminded that this was a night game. Richie Sexton hit an eighth-inning homer, one or two outs in the bottom of the eighth to win the game. They beat the Reds. The ballpark was loud. It was a different place then. They've made so many cosmetic changes to the interior of Miller Park since then. It used to have this kind of yellow cast, and everything was green. The outfield wall was green. The dugout rails were green. It was a different look, and they've made improvements in that area. But the atmosphere that night was pretty electric, and I definitely remember that Richie Sexton homer.
Yeah, no doubts. And, yeah, to have an opening day on a Friday night, weird, but something that definitely stands out. Adam, we're going to wrap things up a little bit differently than in previous weeks, as you recently had the chance to sit down with Craig Counsell as you and the Brewers skipper discussed the upcoming 2017 season for the Brew Crew.
I'm Adam McKelvey of MLB.com. We're here with Brewers manager Craig Counsell entering year three of the Counsell regime. And you like that terminology?
Yeah.
Craig, we're nearing the end of spring training, and I'm thinking back to the first day of spring training when you gave your address to the club, and one of the things you said, and you've said this to us many times, the idea you've tried to impart to these guys is not putting limits on this season on their own performances. Can you sort of explain why that is such an important message that you repeat to these guys?
I think every baseball season is sacred to me. I mean, we only get so many shots at this. So I think it's important for them to understand. And I think we have to continuously raise the standards of what we expect. And when you look at, you know, this year's team, when I look at this year's team, I really believe, why would we set limits on these guys? It's a young group that has... although not experienced and not doesn't have kind of long-term track records, I do think has shown at in recent times that they're capable of pretty good things.
Does that mean that if everything breaks right, you think this team could surprise and actually like contend?
Well, I think that's what everybody thinks right now in 30 camps, and you should think that. And that's kind of my point, is that we should think that, and we should be optimistic. And we should be hopeful, and we should expect the best, and we should expect great performances out of our guys. That's the mindset you should be going into right now when at the end of spring training after a successful camp, after, you know, a camp in which I think a lot of we've had a lot of guys play very well. That's and a season which we had, which we finished well with a lot of guys playing very well. I think that's where we should be.
The more basic goal I know for you is just get better. You've talked also about players. It's take the next step in whatever your path is. And you had some guys do that last season.
Yeah, that's an important. That's probably the most important step for a lot of these guys. We have a lot of players in the same kind of boat, in the same experience time frame from a major league perspective, especially on the position player side. Mm-hmm. And also a couple of key members in our bullpen, I think, are in that position. So it's really the next step for them as big league baseball players, and it's kind of the step that's like I belong, you know, that I'm a big leaguer, I'm a regular big leaguer, I'm a good big league baseball player, and it's comes through failure and it comes through a little bit of success, but it's a stage that a lot of our guys they've kind of had that taste of success, they've had that setback or that failure, and now they've had a little bit of experience, and the next step is kind of proving you belong.
What areas do you think the team could be better in this season than it was last season?
Well, that's, I mean, I'll answer every area.
Yeah. That's what every manager wants.
Yes,
right?
So you're going to, I think we can be better in every area. And every year that'll be the goal, certainly to be better. I mean, I think, we led the league in stolen bases last year. But I think we can be better, a better base running team. And without leading the league in stolen bases, mm-hmm. we can be a better base running team. So, that's my frame of reference for saying everything can improve. Even if you're really good at it, you can find ways for it to improve.
The biggest changes on your team, it seems, are on the infield. New catcher, whoever that ends up being, a new third baseman, Travis Shaw, and a new first baseman, Eric Thames, from, you know, after having sort of eyes on them now for 6 weeks, are you confident that the changes David made are going to be part of what has the chance to make you a better team this year?
Yeah, I mean, those are the big changes really are, you know, we're not going to have changes in our, significant changes in our starting rotation. It's going to be, it looked very similar to the way we finished last year. Our outfield is going to look similar to the way we finished last year. So, you know, the infield and catcher is going to be different. And really, I think we've created, what we've done there is we're a more versatile group this year as far as on a daily basis kind of what we can match up against the team and provide, you know, against the team. So I think we're more insulated to matchups, more insulated for bumps and bruises, injuries during the season. I think we're in a spot again where there's competition for at-bats, which is a good place to be, which I really thought was a positive for us at the end of last season. So that's a part of what Thames and Shaw, and from the catching perspective, I don't think we're going to have a catcher. I think it's going to be a, kind of a job share mm-hmm. situation. So that's really what I think the new players are providing.
You mentioned another word that you've said a lot, competition. And that seems like that's your goal here, is to create sort of a constant, friendly, you know, team competition to drive everybody better. Is that sort of one of the things you feel good about establishing here so far in the regime, the first 2 years of the regime?
Yeah, it's happened, and it happens as the players get better. And frankly, where it really kind of hit me hard yesterday was when is sending guys down. And you end up having these tougher conversations in spring training because the players in the room are better mm-hmm. and the standards go up. And so you have to have conversations that you don't really anticipate having. And with guys that have had some success and been prospects and been good players and are prospects, and you end up having them to send them to the minor leagues. And that's, I think that's a sign that there's been competition here and that the players are, we're having tougher decisions with quality players.
Well, thanks, Greg. I appreciate the time.
Thanks, Adam.
It is March 27th. The countdown continues as opening night is 6 nights away. Opening day, 1 week from today for the 2017 season. Talking Reds baseball today with Mark Sheldon, as always. And, Mark, you were on vacation last week, and was this kind of the equivalent of, you know, when there's, like, an expectant couple and they're a couple months away from having a baby and they take what's called a baby moon? It's not a honeymoon, but it's a baby moon where they vacation, you know, one last hurrah before the baby comes. Was this kind of your equivalent of that where, you know, before baseball arrives for, you know, six nonstop months, you took your own equivalent of a baby moon? Is that, can we make that equation here?
I'm not sure about that, but I know that I try to put my time off together in a block so I could spend the most time with my family and my, especially my kids, and get some real time, and they get to come out. It's their spring break, and I want to be able to be available to them and not always working. So I work part of the time, and I have some time off for part of the time. And, yeah, I guess it's a little bit of a respite before the grind of the season, but I'll never complain about getting time off, and I'll never complain about covering baseball. So, yeah, it's all good.
Yep, it's a win-win all the way around. I'd say that's a well-timed vacation on your part, as, like we said, 1 week away from the grind beginning again for the 2017 season. So, Mark, with that, let's tie up some loose ends with the Reds, as every team is going to be breaking camp here in less than a week. When the 25-man roster is announced for opening day, when it's unveiled, is the name Bronson Arroyo going to be on that list?
I'm really of the belief that it will be. It seems like all he has to do is stay healthy. They're not too worried about the results. They're not worried about his velocity. They're just simply worried that his body can hold up to the demands of throwing five to six, perhaps even seven innings. He has, after a two-year layoff, so he's going to have a minor league game this coming Tuesday. And then on April 2nd, he'll have one more minor league game here in Arizona. He will not go back with the team. And then if he gets through those two outings, very likely he will fly into Cincinnati and be on the field for introductions on April 3rd. So that's what I'm looking at. Anything can change. I've seen things change at the last possible minute. If he got clobbered, if he gets hurt, if he has fatigue, that could all change the plans. But they knew going in that he was not going to be a velocity pitcher. They just wanted to see that he had his stuff, and they really are trusting him that he knows his body and that he can hold up to the demands of starting.
And, Mark, you know, if I'm reading this correctly, it seems like, you go back a month and a half, and this kind of started off as a feel-good story, but I don't think anybody legitimately thought that he had a real shot at making the opening day roster. You know, nothing against him, but, again, as you said, there's the age and the injury history and the layoff. I mean, is even the most optimistic Reds fan kind of surprised that this is transpiring right now?
I'm a little bit surprised, but then again, I think things changed in his favor when Anthony DeSclafani got hurt. They didn't have enough veteran presence in that rotation. Scott Feldman, although he is a veteran, he's not doesn't have quite the track record that someone like Arroyo has, and I think they – Knowing Bronson for as long as they did, and knowing what he meant to the team and the clubhouse, and knowing what he meant to the city, they know they have a known commodity there if he's healthy. And I think that was enough for them to make him a candidate for the team. And so, yeah, he did exceed some expectations. He looked good at his starts. Unfortunately for him, he got hit in the face by a Devin Mesoraco throw that cut one of them short. But, there hasn't been an outing where he's gotten clobbered. He's given up a home run here and there, which is what he did anyway. It's just the way his stuff plays sometimes, especially out here. And he still has the deception. He still has the different looks. He'll throw any pitch at any count. And even if he's only throwing 85 to 86 miles an hour, he can still get guys out.
Yeah, and I mean, it would be great, like you said, if when the opening day lineup and roster is unveiled at Great American Ballpark, if he is marched out there to the foul line, what an ovation that would be for the 40-year-old Bronson Arroyo. We'll see what the next few days bring on that front. Mark, transitioning now to the bullpen, you seem to indicate that the Reds are going to carry a second lefty in the pen alongside their main lefty, Tony Cingrani. The two names kind of vying for that spot seem to be Lucas Litke and Wandy Peralta. Of the two, does one have the inside track?
Well, that's a tough one. I think based on performance only, it would be Litke, but Litke has the disadvantage of being a non-roster player, and Peralta is on the roster. So, and they have other guys such as Arroyo they need to add to the roster. So I think some roster jujitsu might be in order to make it work for Litke. I think also he's a veteran in a sense that he's been in 111 major league games with Seattle. He's 30 years old, so he does have a little bit of experience that Peralta does not have. But one thing that is maybe favoring either one of those guys is that they're going to look like go with an 8-man bullpen and a 4-man bench. By they released Ryan Rayburn today, by with all indications that they'll have an 8-man bullpen to help shore up the youth of the rotation. So there is enough room for two lefties, Cingrani and one of those other two guys, and then we'll see what happens. But I kind of want to give the edge to Littke based on performance, and then they'll figure out a way to make it work.
Yeah, it's tough, like you said. Littke may have the better numbers, but Peralta is on the roster. That may give him the inside track. We'll see what happens there. And, Mark, seeing as this is our last podcast before opening day, and that is hard to believe, I want to get some thoughts from you about some guys you know, in certain categories for this Reds team, guys that might break out, guys that could have a bounce-back season, and a guy that possibly could regress from having an overachieving 2016. So let's start at the top of that list. I would think that this question skews more towards younger guys, but when you look at that group, and there's a lot of them on this Reds team, this rebuilding Reds team, which young player is best positioned to have a breakout season?
Now, there's a few. I think, I don't know if you would call this a breakout, but I would. I think someone like Eugenio Suarez, who had 21 homers last year, was his first full year as a third baseman. He made a lot of errors in the early going, but really kind of settled down in the second half. He can hit to both fields. I think he could be due for a very, very nice season. And, you know, a lot of people don't know his name. He does not figure among the top 10 of Major League third baseman or even National League third baseman. But I think people are going to be hearing him about him a lot more this season if he takes the step up that I think he's going to take.
Yeah, one of those under-the-radar guys that could be firmly on the radar, let's say by the All-Star break if all goes as planned. And, Mark, the second item on that list, after underachieving last year, what player could have a bounce-back performance this year?
Well, if any player needs a bounce-back performance after 2 years of basically not playing, it'd be Devin Mesoraco. He's not going to start the season on the active roster, most likely. He's going to be on the disabled list. But I think if anyone's due for a bounce back, it's him. He's so far so good in terms of he's feeling good. He feels like he can do all the things he needs to do behind the plate and have the mobility that his hips are giving him. His shoulder that he had surgically repaired feels good. And he's been hitting reasonably well, even though he's not feeling 100% in terms of his baseball skills. He's got some rust still he's trying to work off. But I think once he puts it together, he is at least due for a bounce-back year. I think if he's healthy and is able to play, he should be able to produce. There's no reason, unless he's injured again, that he shouldn't.
And, Mark, the other side of that coin, if there's a guy that perhaps overachieved last year, maybe had something resembling a career year, who is at least a candidate for a little bit of regression here in 2017?
You got to wonder about left fielder Adam Duvall. He was a first-time All-Star, kind of the breakout player of 2016. You know, he had a really strong first half, got into the All-Star game, and then he kind of dropped off in the second half. He's a guy that has huge slugging numbers, but not much in the way of on-base percentage. He has a kind of resembling of a you know, Tony Armas or a Dave Kingman kind of numbers with a big slugging percentage and a low on-base. But he's still a very good fielder, and they like him a lot. I could see him taking a step back, maybe not having 30-something home runs. Maybe he has a few less. Maybe the league has figured him out a little bit. He's going to have to make some adjustments this year in order to stay ahead of the curve.
Yeah, a few red flags in that second half, but like you said, the talent and the raw power certainly there, and maybe he puts it all together in 2017. He could go either direction. It'll be interesting to see which direction he indeed does go. And, Mark, to begin to wrap up here, of course, it's our last podcast, as I said, before 2017 opening day. So from the home openers that you've covered, covering the Cincinnati Reds team, what is your primary memory from all those years?
I'm going to cheat a little bit. It's weird is that I remember my last covering of the Twins in 05. I was in Seattle, and they had a great opening day. The President of the United States, the band played, and all the players were played out of the field with the music. And I thought that was a super cool thing. But going back to the Reds, my very first year on the beat was 06, and President George W. Bush threw out the ceremonial first pitch. And, of course, I just remember it being 30 degrees and freezing cold as my first Reds opening day. It was actually my first time ever setting foot inside Great American Ballpark. And I just remember being dogs, snipers, Secret Service, the White House press corps, all of that kind of going with it. It was just an odd experience of seeing that all put together. And then, of course, the year after, Mark Mallory, the mayor of Cincinnati, threw a horribly debacle-less ceremonial first pitch that still lives in infamy on YouTube. And I think people will remember that. So I would say those are probably my my biggest opening day memories.
Was it better or worse than 50 Cent with the Mets a year or two back?
Tell you what, it's a toss-up. If you watch both of those, they're not that far apart in terms of the quality. They're both horrendous, all-time bad ceremonial first pitches. And I think 50 Cent and Mayor Mallory are definitely maybe even.
Yeah, maybe they can get together for lunch and discuss their woes. Mark Sheldon, great stuff as always. This week, we're going to wrap things up a bit differently as you, Mark, had the chance to sit down recently with Brian Price as the two of you discussed what is on the docket for the Reds in the upcoming 2017 season.
Hi, this is Mark Sheldon from MLB.com, and I'm here in the office with manager Brian Price. Brian, as we're nearing opening day, you obviously still have some roles that are open, but much of your roster seems to be coming together, especially your everyday lineup and things like that. What do you like about your team as you're getting closer to the regular season?
Well, I like the youth component and the athleticism. You know, I think that's a big deal. It's not just by adding Peraza to the mix, but it's having, you know, what I think is going to be the first full season of Scott Schebler in right field for us. He's, you know, he adds a dynamic to us of athleticism and power, and he's an exciting player. Another year with Suarez at third base, he just looks better and better over the course of the spring. I think it's a position that he's going to, you know, really make his own and define himself as a really top level defensive third baseman. And having a full season of Devin Mesoraco would be a real bonus for us to go with Tucker Barnhart behind the plate. Now we've got great leadership regardless of who's behind the plate on any given day. And that makes a big difference to go, especially with a young pitching staff.
And you have Adam Duvall trying to follow up the year he had last year. He had a slower second half, but he really did come out gangbusters in the first half, right? I'm assuming you're looking for more of the same what he did at the beginning of last season.
Yeah, you know, it's you know, getting acclimated. You know, this is a kind of a punch and counterpunch business, you know, and Adam punched the league pretty firm in the first half, made the All-Star team, was in the league leaders in homers and RBIs. He's a big run producer. He ended the season with 30-plus homers and over 100 RBIs, a lot of doubles, and also did a super job in left field. And then the league came back in the second half and had some answers for, you know, what they had seen in the first half, and now it's his turn to counterpunch, and I believe confidently that he'll be able to do that.
And nobody probably counterpunched better last season than Joey Votto. The way he kind of came back after a slow first 2 months, he really brought it as well. And I guess you're probably imagining if he can put that all together for a full season, that's an MVP caliber season.
It is. And the game's hard to play, and we all know that. It's hard to be that good for 162 game season for anybody. That's what those seasons are all about when we talk about you know, Ted Williams or more recently a Miguel Cabrera type of a triple crown season or things of that nature. That's an ability to hold something together for a 162 game season, which is such a challenge in any part of this game. But I'm a believer that Joey can do it. It wouldn't surprise me, you know, to see him go start to finish with the type of on base, the line drive contact that he makes, and the type of offensive dynamic that he brought to the field every game in that second half. Really, the last 4 months of the season was just a dominant performance, and I think he's capable of doing that. But if he did, he'd be doing something that was special and is rare.
In your bullpen, you have five of the seven, maybe eight spots spoken for. You're obviously going to try something a little new this year. You're not really dedicating a closer. You have four guys that maybe they will make less appearances but pitch more innings, multiple innings. How do you, now that you're kind of getting closer to the season, how do you view that working out for you and the team this season?
Well, it is. It's a we'll see situation. You know, the best laid plans, you know, you always have to have fallback. But my feeling is, you know, we have to get these guys acclimated to it. I think we began to do that last year. Iglesias got a handful of save opportunities. Lorenzen got a lot of multiple inning opportunities when he came back to us after his stint on the DL. And Blake Wood is another one of those guys that can be multiple inning late in the game. I think Storn and Cingrani are typically going to be guys that are more inning or an inning plus. That being said, having a guy like Drew Storn allows me to do what I need to do with Lorenzen and Iglesias and still have a guy with closer's experience if I need a closer on any given day. I think it can work quite well. What has to happen is the group down there has to band together and be motivated to finish the day with a win, regardless who gets the win, who gets the save, who gets the hold, whatever it may be, is to define the success of the individual by the success of the group. And that's what's great about baseball, is if you can play that type of game, you can get more out of your ability than you would think.
Obviously, the rotation's still in flux, but no matter who's in the five, it's going to be a younger rotation, and they're not necessarily known for yet to be consistent with going deep in games and having innings. How much of a concern is having the bullpen pick up some of the innings that the starting rotation may not be able to pick up and getting to the end of the game?
Well, the concern I don't think will be the innings. It'll be the appearances, and it'll be the amount of time that we can find off for any inning pitcher. You know, if I find that in order to be able to win on a consistent basis, I've got to use multiple relievers for multiple innings, you know, again and again and again, that won't work. That'll peter out rather quickly. The other thing is we have to give these young guys opportunities to learn how to pitch after the sixth inning. And sometimes that comes at a price, you know. We don't want to say that this isn't the same as the minor leagues, where the development is the most important thing. It is important, but at the end of the day, we want to taste the fruits of the labor and have a victory to show for it. As much as the opportunity will be there for these young guys to get those innings and those opportunities, we certainly at the forefront has to be, at the end of the day, has to be the victory. So it'll be quite a balancing act, and I think our young guys are up to the task.
Thanks very much, Brian. I appreciate you doing this.
You bet, Mark.
Just over 48 hours from now, the Chicago Cubs will take the field as defending World Series champions for the first time since 1909. The countdown is on. We're talking Cubs baseball today for the final time in spring training 2017 with our Cubs reporter, Kerry Muscat. Kerry, as always, we thank you for the time on this Friday as, again, the countdown continues. And, Kerry, ideally, you know, you would love to open the season at Wrigley Field. Obviously, that's not happening this year. You're going to be at Busch Stadium taking on the Cardinals. But, you know, supposing that if you were told that, well, the Cubs are going to have to open the season on the road, is there any better place, given the rivalry and given the history between the two clubs, is there any place you'd rather be on the road than Busch Stadium in St. Louis on Sunday night?
Well, actually, looking at the weather report, I might prefer Phoenix or Anaheim or someplace that was a little warmer. The forecast, there's a little bit of rain in the forecast, so I'm keeping fingers crossed that the Cubs and Cardinals will be able to play without any issues. So, no, it's always fun to have Cubs-Cardinals. I don't think either team needs any more hype going into this season. The Cardinals are eager to get back into the postseason, and the Cubs are eager to defend the title.
Yeah, I mean, that's all the storyline you need right there. That's appealing enough. And it's assuming that Mother Nature cooperates, it's going to be a great way to kind of lead into the traditional opening day on Monday with the Sunday night game between the Cubs and the Cardinals. Kerry, right now you're in Houston. The Cubs are wrapping up the final of two exhibition games with the Astros, and that could very well be a World Series preview. You never know. But Addison Russell made his return last night on Thursday. He'd missed about a week. He'd been out since March 22nd, some lower back stiffness, and the guy, you know, didn't miss a beat, of course. He gets two hits, drives in three, hits a long home run. Any concern whatsoever about this back stiffness, or is he a guy that, you know, he's young and in his prime and he's going to shake it off, and there's no reason that it wouldn't be full speed ahead with him?
Nope, everything's good. I think they were really encouraged, especially when Addison made a really nice play on Jose Altuve's grounder, and Addison went down to one knee, got up, spun around, and threw him out in time. And I think that was pretty much all the Cubs needed to see to know that he was 100% healthy.
Yeah, he did everything in the field, at the plate, and he's going to be 100% ready to go by the time that Sunday night rolls around. But, Kerry, on the topic of back pain, Addison not the only one with that particular ailment. Reliever Brian Dunsing also is dealing with his fair share as a result. Dunsing has been placed on the 10-day DL, which still sounds odd to me. But he's on the shelf for now. So because of that, Kerry, what kind of a trickle-down effect has this had on the rest of the 25-man opening day roster?
Well, just to clarify, Dunsing went on the DL mainly because he's been bothered by the back spasms this spring and didn't really have time to build up the arm strength. So the back is better, and actually the back is fine. This will give him a chance to build up his arm strength before they call him up and get him active in the regular season. That by not having Dunsing, they decided to go with 12 pitchers at the start of the season. Therefore, they could keep both Matt Caesar and Tommy La Stella as position players and didn't have to make a decision as to one or the other. Caesar's out of options. La Stella has some left. Caesar's a right-handed batter. La Stella's a left-handed batter. It was kind of a tough choice. They like them both, but they only have room for 25 on the roster, so they went with they decided to go with those two position players, and they'll go with 12 pitchers and go from there.
And Kerry, if you had to speculate, if that decision did have to be made between Caesar and La Stella, which way do you think the Cubs would have leaned?
Don't know. I guess business-wise, you'd go with Caesar, but because they like him. But Joe's also talked a lot about how there's a lot of right-handed pitchers in the National League Central, and that's who they face early on. And for this first week, it actually plays well into the Cubs' hands because they'll have the extra left-handed bat coming off the bench.
Yeah, you never like to see a guy, like Dunsing. Like you said, the back is okay, but he still needs time to build up the strength in the arm. So right now, it's I guess if there's such a thing as a good DL situation, this might be it, because La Stella and Caesar are both on the roster for now, and the bullpen is still plenty deep, so we'll see what happens when Dunsing gets healthy. A very interesting decision coming up for Joe Maddon and the Cubs. And, Kerry, I want to get your thoughts, too, as, again, spring training is almost in the books here. But given the fact that the Cubs had a very heavy workload last season, they played into November, obviously, with Game 7 of the World Series. It was taxing mentally and physically, and even the offseason, it was more active than relaxing with all the appearances and celebrating the World Championship. When you factor in all those things into that equation, did that in any way influence or dictate the way that Joe Maddon kind of ran things in spring training in terms of, what a daily workload was or getting these guys maybe additional rest? Did that at all have any influence these last 5 or 6 weeks?
Well, it was the extended season in 2016, but it was also the extended spring because of the World Baseball Classic. They didn't feel that there was any need to get Lester, Arrieta, Lackey, or Hendricks into any of the Cactus League games in that first week of action just because they'd had, just a couple months ago they were pitching. So they eased them into their workload for spring training. It seems to have paid off. I know Brett Anderson on Thursday complimented what the Cubs pitching coach Chris Bosio did is in terms of how they handled the pitchers. Didn't make them stand out there in the desert and shag. They made sure that they had time to get their work in, and then that was it. And that hopefully it paid off. It seems like the pitchers are feeling pretty fresh.
Yeah, and that's always a good thing, because as nice as the weather is in Arizona, it can be punishing at times, that dry heat especially. So it's always important to kind of strike that delicate balance between getting your work in and not getting overtaxed. So so far, so good for the Cubs in that regard. Kerry, shifting gears a little bit, I always love the feel-good off-the-field stories, and a nice one you had on Cubs.com regarding Miguel Montero. Been rather active in helping out to children, especially ailing children, in his native Venezuela. If you could kind of elaborate on that for us.
Well, Miguel and his wife Vanessa have decided to establish a foundation so that they can help kids in Venezuela. Miguel feels that there's just some lack of medical treatment down there in his homeland, and so he and Vanessa have created a foundation. What they hope to do is sponsor one or two or maybe three kids to come to the States and get treatments. They'll take care of the travel expense. They'll take care of the living expenses for the kids and their families here and see if they can help them out. Miguel was saying if he can help just one kid, that would be enough. They're working with a hospital in Houston. I'm not sure which one, but I know that Miggy was really, really eager to do this. He introduced it during an event with the Cubs players, and Governor Rob Ducey of Arizona attended it, and it was it's really a nice thing to see.
Yeah, it really is. He's done exemplary work off the field with kids in his native Venezuela, so hats off to Miguel Montero, no question there. Kerry, as we come down the home stretch here, I want to throw a couple of random topics at you, just kind of seeing where certain players may fall into what category for the 2017 season. So I want to get your thoughts on when you look at this extremely young, talented, deep roster that the Cubs have. Give me one guy that you think is best positioned for a real breakout season here in 2017.
Well, we kind of touched on him earlier. I think Addison Russell's poised to do really well. For one, he won't be batting as low in the batting order, and he just seems just have gained so much confidence from last season, the postseason play he did. You could just see him kind of growing up as the season progressed. So I would look for Addison Russell to really have some pretty nice numbers going into this year.
Yeah, his OPS well over 1,000 in the spring. And again, you take spring numbers with a grain of salt, as everybody knows. But like you said, when you take that and factor in what he did in the latter half of 2016 and the postseason, I think sky is the limit for Addison Russell, and a lot of people would agree with that. Kerry, I think the answer to this one kind of obvious, but we'll address it anyway. Give me one guy on the Cubs that is poised for a bounce back season.
Well, obviously, pick is Jason Hayward. He, you know, obviously wasn't happy with his .230 average in his first year in Chicago. I know he worked so hard this winter, and I asked Joe Maddon about him today if he thought that he'd seen enough, and he feels that he has. It seems that Hayward has he's more comfortable with the changes that they've made. He's feeling good at the plate, and it's just a matter now of hoping that it translates into games. I just hope that he gets off to a good start.
Yeah, absolutely. And as you wrote recently, he had a lot of atom balls this spring where he made great contact, but right at guys, and therefore the numbers look worse than his performance really reflects. And so hopefully he gets a little more batted ball luck here in 2017 and gets off to the good start that everybody is craving for him. Kerry, give me one guy on the Cubs that maybe overachieved a little bit last year and therefore could possibly regress a little bit here in 2017.
Well, you know, you presented that question earlier today, and to be perfectly honest, I can't think of anybody.
Interesting.
Overachieved and regressed, I don't see it. I mean, you've got a lot of young kids who actually they anticipate just getting better.
Yeah, and that's a good point because of the makeup of this team. There's so many young guys that, you know, the Cubs, there's a reason why the Cubs are the envy of the other 29 teams in baseball, not only deep and talented, but very young. And so, you know, Cubs fans hoping that there is not a player that regresses this year. And by all considerations, maybe there won't be. That would lead to only good things here in 2017. And, Kerry, just to wrap up here, you know, I imagine that you and Cubs Nation just obviously cannot wait for the home opener at Wrigley and how historic that's going to be. The sight of the banner going up, of the players getting their rings, and it's going to trump anything that may have occurred in the past however many years. But when you look back at your personal memories of past home openers, what is one that really stands out to you as your favorite?
I can't really pick a favorite. I'd have to say that last year was pretty impressive because the Cubs had a lot of the emphasis during spring training had been to make sure that they could deliver with clutch hits, that they could come through and play good defense. And they went to Anaheim and they won 9-0, and Arrieta pitched really well. And it was just a perfect game to start out with. And I know in talking to Theo Epstein after the game and actually a little later during the season, he mentioned that he just got such a good vibe from that opener and you could tell in the clubhouse that the guys were really pumped because it was just a great way to start the season with just a dominating win and just delivering with runners in scoring position. And it was just what they needed to start the season. And Theo said that he just got a good feeling about the season from that point. So I'm going to defer to Theo. I have covered too many opening days. I can't pick one.
Yeah, well, that's not a bad one to select, obviously. A bit odd to have that interleague matchup, but to get out of the cold weather for at least a couple games down there in L.A. Certainly didn't hurt, and that set the tone for what was an historic 2016 Chicago Cubs season. Well, Kerry, we're going to wrap things up a bit differently this week as you and the other team reporters had the chance to sit down with your respective managers. So right now, we're going to air your interview with Joe Maddon previewing the world champion Cubs and their quest to repeat here in 2017.
The biggest change in the lineup this year is that Dexter's gone.
Right.
All right. What do you think with – Kyle's a little different, very different from Dex.
Right.
What do you expect with a full season of Schwarber?
Regardless of where he hits in the batting order, you could expect a lot of the same. However, I think a little bit more in the one hole, only because I think if you move them down, he's not going to get protected in the same way. I think with Bryant and Rizzo hitting behind him, hopefully all being well, he's going to get pitched at differently in a good way for us. So I think by hitting him first, you have the chance to see the best of Kyle Schwarber.
Okay. Are you still going to go Yugo, we go with Kyle?
No, I'm working on something different with him right now. It has something to do with his eyes, and we're working on that right now.
You know Wade Davis better than anybody from your days together in Tampa. What should Cub fans know about Wade?
He'll always look like he's about ready to take a nap or just awaken from one. That's just who he is. He's always had this real slow heartbeat. He handles all kinds of situations in the same manner, which I really like. Although I'll say this, he's really a little bit more vocal than I had remembered from the past. Maybe World Series victory would have done that for him, but he's a wonderful young man. He loves to hunt, and his wife is one of the best baseball players, softball players among all wives in Major League Baseball. Caitlin.
I like that. That's good. Mm-hmm. Okay. Rizzo, Bryant, Russell, Baez, Contreras are all very young,
right,
as you know. What do you think winning the World Series last year will do for them?
Confidence. It's always about confidence. When you've done it once, then you really do know how to do it again. I don't anticipate these guys slowing down or backing off or taking anything for granted because we had. I just think that you've learned how to do it. Now you know what it takes to do that. So I believe their work's going to be centered around that thought. I also believe, from my perspective, managing, if I need to give them a day off, they're going to be more amenable to that because they know. That's 2 years in a row now, World Series, NLCS the year before that. They've had two long seasons. They know what their body feels like. Being as young as they are, it's actually helped. But moving it forward, I think the understanding of how all of this works matters a lot as it pertains to rest.
That's good. The spring training crowds are very giddy, as you can probably tell.
Yeah.
Yes. Has it hit you yet as to what you accomplished last year?
You know, I honestly, yes, a little bit more here. When you're kind of insulated in the off season, we left Chicago 2 days after it had happened, after the parade, and then being away, being in Florida a lot, Pennsylvania a lot, was there for the Cub convention, was kind of felt it there. But here, you know, everybody, and I really appreciate the group that just wants to say thank you or nice going or congratulations. That's the group you really like interacting with, and there's a lot of that actually. I grew up here in Mesa a little bit baseball wise. So getting back here in Mesa again, when you get back to your roots, so, you know, driving to the ballpark, I go by Gene Autry Park. We've talked about this a lot, but when you go back to your roots, you can really understand all of this a little bit better.
MLB.tv Premium, the number one live streaming sports service, is celebrating 13 years. Watch every out-of-market regular season game live or on demand in true HD. Real-time highlights, live look-ins, pitch tracking widget, and more. MLB.tv Premium includes a free At-Bat 15 subscription. Watch live baseball on over 400 mobile and connected devices. Watch at home, in the office, or on the go, every night, on every device. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Visit MLB.tv for details.